Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hi everyone, good morning and welcome to First Things First. I put way too much coffee in this morning. We are moving this away, so it is far away from
all right,
my
I'll do the intro, because I have something very important to say. She's Jenna Wolf, I'm Nick Wright. This is Chris Caney. I haven't seen Chris Caney since Sunday. Oh. Chris Caney.
We're still alive,
we're
Nick.
Two games away, baby. Chris Caney
Randolph,
and I,
Randolph.
Yes, had Packers Chiefs.
I know.
In the Super Bowl with the Chiefs
that.
Winning it as a preseason prediction and... We might have both put a little financial investment in it.
Oh, that I did not know.
We may have.
We may have.
You got sucked into his vortex of gambling
and putting too much money into his world.
Oh,
now that I'm on the show a little bit more. Now it feels like we're more like teammates.
All right, absolutely. We are going to talk about the NFC title game and the AFC title game, but we are excited for this morning. There is only one place to start, and it's the game before they get to the NFL. It is the last college football game of the season, and it was a good one. It was especially good if your name is Joe Burrow. The Heisman Trophy winner led LSU to a 42-25 win over Clemson for the fourth national title in school history. And Burrow had a night to remember, pass for 463 yards to go along with six total touchdowns. The kid from Ohio will be forever remembered as a Louisiana legend. Kenny, let's start with you on this and spin it forward. Is Joe Burrow a clear-cut, can't-miss NFL star?
Well, I can't say that he's a can't-miss NFL star because he's most likely going to go to the Cincinnati Bengals and not a lot of high draft picks in Cincinnati end up realizing their full potential. But what Joe Burrow has done this season is nothing short of amazing. And then putting his team in position to be able to compete and win the national championship in the same year where he wins the Heisman and sets the single season record for most passing touchdowns, that's as impressive as we've seen from any quarterback in recent memory in college football. So what this LSU Tigers team has been able to do this entire season, I mean, just to be as dominant as they have been, they started out with a game down in Texas against a top 10 opponent, and it was a little bit of a back and forth in the first half, but I think they showed that they were going to be a different offense this year, just the level of explosiveness that they were going to have. And then the job that Ed Orgeron has done, being able to go out and get Steve Eisenminger and Joe Brady to revolutionize that offensive attack and taking advantage of the five-star recruits that they have been stockpiling down in Baton Rouge. When you have Ja'Marr Chase and you have Justin Jefferson and you have Terrence Mitchell and you had Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I mean, when you have that kind of talent with your skill positions and then you have a player that has the football IQ like Joe Burrow, I mean, that's a deadly combination, and they rode that all the way to a national championship.
I want to start with this. I'm incredibly happy for Coach O. I'm happy for those kids at LSU. Coach O was laughed at when he got this job, and he has never changed who he is. He's never code switched. He's never done anything. He's been who he is, and now he's an undefeated national champion, the coach of one of the, by the way, this is the first team in at least recent memory, maybe ever, to go 4-0 against the preseason AP top four. They beat Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, and Clemson. And by the way, they beat them by an average of 21 points. I didn't think they were going to win yesterday. I thought Clemson had been flying under the radar, winners of 29 straight. And they won mostly because Joe Burrow was sensational again. What did he have? 14 touchdowns in the college football playoff alone. He just finished one of the greatest single seasons in the history of the sport. I have to give him full credit. To answer your question, I say all that to say this. To answer your question, Jenna, I don't think he's the best quarterback coming out this year. I think Tua is going to be a better pro than Burrow. I think the other kid on the field last night is the, even though he didn't play well, is the can't miss. If in 2 years from now in that draft, if I had the number two pick, I would trade the number two pick and my whole draft to move up one spot to get Sunshine, Trevor Lawrence. I don't think Joe Burrow is going to fail in the NFL, but my concerns are a number of them. One is, it is a one-year wonder situation. Now, you can say, Cam Newton was the same thing, but Cam only played 1 year of major college football. One national title in junior college. We have seen Dwayne Haskins only played 1 year, but he only was great for 1 year, but he only played 1 year. Joe Burrow played last season and was not extraordinary until the bowl game against UCF throughout the course of that season. Joe Burrow also is, as we've talked about this year, older than Lamar Jackson. He'll be a 24-year-old rookie. And when I watch him canty, aside from he is very, very, very accurate, and I wonder how much of that is college windows, how much of that's Joe Brady, and how much that's him, I don't know what he does great. I don't think he has really any weaknesses. I think he's a B or above at everything, but is he an A at anything? Is he an A athlete? No, he's a good athlete. Does he have A arm strength? No, he doesn't have the arm strength of Justin Herbert, who's coming out in this class, or even Eason, the kid from Washington. But he has good arm strength. He is very accurate, and his teammates seem to really like him. To me, NFL star, I don't see it. I don't think he is the type of guy where, like when Andrew Luck was coming out, for me, when Trevor Lawrence comes out next year, that the number one pick of the draft is a franchise changer. I think he's more in the Sam Darnold category. Probably going to have a solid NFL career, but I don't know about superstar.
I think a better comp would probably be Daniel Jones coming out of Duke. You know, he probably has a limited ceiling, but he has a higher floor than most prospects because he's coached up well and he has a high football IQ. The one thing I will say about Joe Burrow that I think separates him from the other quarterbacks in college football is just his ability to be able to process information and make decisions quickly. And you saw that last night going up against Clemson. Just some of the things that he saw, being able to identify where he wanted to go with the football pre-snap and then being able to get it there. Now, I'm agreeing with you. When you're taking somebody that high in the draft, you want them to have dominant physical traits. I really don't see that from Joe Burrow, but I do see adequate enough arm talent. I do see adequate enough accuracy. You do see the mobility. You saw that third down draw that he ran right before the half that led to a touchdown score, and they go up by 11 points at the halftime. Like, being able to just move around, functional movement within the pocket, the ability to be able to extend plays and convert first downs with your legs when you need them, you have to have that in today's game. But in terms of Joe Burrow's success at the next level, I mean, it's really about the situation that he's going to be put into, and the supporting cast in Cincinnati is just not there. You can make an argument that he has better skill position players now at LSU than he's going to have in Cincinnati.
Well, that was going to be my question. How much better does he look because he's basically surrounded by NFL players right now at the college level?
And to his credit, and our great statistician Dusty made this point before the show, and it's a good one, LSU has had studs at the skill positions for a long time and has never done this. I mean,
they had Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham at the same time.
They had Dwayne Bowe years ago. They've had quality running backs there. They've never had the quarterback. And again, Joe Burrow won the Heisman, deserved it. He broke Tua's single season efficiency record that Tua broke from Baker Mayfield. That record keeps getting broken, by the way, year after year now, as the passing game becomes the dominant way to move the ball in college football even. But I'm not making this comp because it's the Bengals. But to me, when I watch him, even if physically they don't look alike, there's a lot of, I think it's kind of a rich man's Andy Dalton. A guy, and Andy Dalton became a punchline. That's not fair. Andy Dalton was solid at almost everything. I think Joe Burrow is good at almost everything. I don't think he's great at anything. And when we, at least that I've seen, and again, I hate knocking the guy right now. He's going to be the number one pick. He's going to be very wealthy and very successful. So he'll be able to deal with it. But when you look at the best quarterbacks in football right now, all of them are elite at least one thing. Russell Wilson, it's the intangibles and the escapability. Patrick Mahomes, it's the arm talent and the arm angles. Aaron Rodgers, by the way, same type of thing. Go down the list. Deshaun Watson was not a one-year wonder. Deshaun Watson, every year he started at Clemson, he was tremendous. I watch Joe and I say, I think he'll be good. I think he'll be good, and if I was drafting sixth, like the Giants were with Daniel Jones, I'd be thrilled to take him. At number one, I really wish Tua would have been healthy. Because if I'm the Cincinnati Bengals and Tua doesn't break his hip, to me it's a very, very easy, clear-cut decision. I'll take Tua Tagovailoa, who I think is elite at a number of things.
It's interesting you brought up Andy Dalton, because in the year that the Bengals drafted him, he wasn't their first-round pick. They took A.J. Green because A.J. Green was a better player. So Cincinnati's on the clock. We'll see what they do.
Everybody has to do taxes, and yet not everybody feels comfortable doing taxes. That doesn't seem right, especially when you consider all the amazing things these same people accomplish every day of their lives. TurboTax believes that with the right tools and encouragement, people can be good at anything, even taxes. And to help people feel more comfortable with the tax process, TurboTax Live gives you personal access to experienced CPAs and EAs who are there for you, even on nights and weekends. They're happy to go through your return with you line by line to double check that you've done everything right, so you can be sure to get your best possible refund and feel 100% confident in your taxes. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
Mahomes' epic comeback against the Texans is still fresh on our minds, but Mahomes himself, he's moved on to the Titans, a team that has been a rather annoying thorn in the side of Andy Reid. Since becoming the Chiefs head coach, Andy Reid's just 1-4 against Tennessee, a Tennessee team coming off big wins over the Patriots and the Ravens. Mahomes knows, though, that beating them won't be easy.
Being in the AFC Championship game, we're going to put the pressure on ourselves to find a way to win it. I mean, when you fall that just that close, that short last year, the next step is to get to the Super Bowl. And so we understood that going into this season, but we know it's a long season. We know it's a process. We know that day by day we have to get better. And I think that's what this team is great at, is just getting better every single day and then going out and fighting to the end every single opportunity we get.
Nick, is there any chance, what's any chance at all, that the Chiefs could lose this game against Tennessee?
No. And I know some reaction might be, wait, they played a couple months ago and the Titans beat them. And they did. And it wasn't, and Mahomes was back and Mahomes was sensational. And the Chiefs still lost that game. Different teams, different situations. One, that game was in Tennessee. Secondarily, Derrick Henry was excellent in that game, but not the reason why Tennessee won the game. Despite him being excellent, Tennessee was dead. They were 4th-and-17, failed, Chiefs ball, down 5, minute 55 left, and then everything but yakety sack started playing for the Kansas City Chiefs as they invented a way to lose that football game. But I want to talk about Derrick Henry for a moment, because I know what people say. Oh, the path is the Titans win time of possession, Titans run the football, Chiefs can't get on the field. While Derrick Henry has been on this historic run, the Titans have not been winning time of possession. They are, since week 10, second lowest time of possession in football. It's odd. It's not what you would think. You would think they're running the ball, but that's not the case. What is the case is on their scoring drives, they're having long, drawn-out drives, but also having a lot of three and outs mixed in there. And as the Chiefs demonstrated 2 days ago, with their offense clicking the way it is, you better get to 30. And the Titans are not going to get to 30 on the legs of Derrick Henry. They are going to have to try to get to 30 on the arm of Ryan Tannehill. And to that I say, good luck. And if you do it, I will tip my cap to you. The Chiefs right now are the best team in the NFL. The Titans are coming off an excellent three-game stretch. And this is where it ends this weekend. In the game they beat the Chiefs earlier this year, there's a defensive score. There were the odd stuff at the end. It's not duplicable. What the Chiefs did against the Texans is duplicable in this regard. Just keep scoring touchdowns. Have the best quarterback with the best skill position talent in football. Keep scoring touchdowns. Canty, the only way I think you can slow down the Chiefs offense is if you have a dominant pass rush. I don't think it's about whether you play man or zone, because you don't have enough people to double Kelce and Tyreek Hill. That's what happened with Houston. The Titans do not have a dominant pass rush. I don't see their path to victory.
They didn't have a dominant pass rush throughout the regular season, but their pass rush looked pretty good on Saturday night against Lamar Jackson and that Ravens offense. And I'm with you in terms of the Titans with their path to victory has to be trying to win time of possession. More importantly, limiting the possessions of the Kansas City Chiefs. Because if you talk about the Chiefs having double-digit drives in this game, then you're probably talking about a Titans L and the Chiefs punching their ticket to go to Super Bowl 54. But in terms of what they've done well since they've gotten into the postseason, the Titans have been incredibly opportunistic. You look at their win last week against Baltimore, and on every turnover that Baltimore had, they capitalized and they scored touchdowns. Whether it were takeaways or turnovers on downs, the Titans took advantage of it. The fourth down stop in the second quarter, what did their offensive coordinator do the play after that? Shot over the top to Khalif Raymond for a touchdown. So I think you're going to have to sprinkle in some explosive plays in the passing game, coupled with what Derrick Henry has done. But I mean, this is a pretty formidable Titans group. I think when you match up the two teams, clearly the Titans win with physicality, and I do believe that bodes well for people once you get to playoff-style football. So the more physical team is going to have to impose their will on the opposing team and the complexion of this game. If Tennessee can dictate that, then I think they got a puncher's chance.
A lot of pressure on Tennessee's pass defense as well. This is a much more well-rounded offense than you saw with the Patriots or with the Ravens.
Well, it's certainly more dangerous. The one good thing that happened early in the Texans game for the Chiefs is it forced them to abandon the running game. So I wouldn't necessarily call the Chiefs offense well-balanced. I would call it just dynamic. And Chiefs should not be screwing around running the football. No. The best rusher they had this weekend was Patrick Mahomes on pass plays where he had man coverage, saw everybody's backs to him, and just ran the football. It would be a mistake if the Chiefs try to run a balanced offensive attack. Do what you do best. All of these highlights. Have the best player in the NFL throw to the fastest players in the NFL and go up and down the field. And the other question I have for the Titans is this. Derrick Henry already has had the greatest three-game stretch in the history of the NFL. Nobody's ever had 180 yards rushing in three consecutive games. Not only has he done it in three consecutive games, they've been three consecutive win-or-go-home games. Week 17 against the Texans backups was a de facto playoff game for them because they could have not made the playoffs depending on what happened in the rest of the bracket. They went into that game thinking we had to win to get in. And then obviously the playoff games are win-or-go-home games. I think Derrick Henry is sensational, and he's either going to get hit with a franchise tag or a big payday this summer, and I'm happy for him.
Mm-hmm.
How much does he have left in the tank? 96 carries in the last 19 days, right? Like, how much realistically, 588 yards, 6 yards per carry, is he going to, after already having the greatest three-game stretch we've ever seen, is he going to tack onto that? At some point, he slows down a bit, and I think he's going to be forced to slow down because it is hard to run the football and play the style they want to play if you're trailing. And they, in this three-game stretch, Canny, I look at it, they have beaten one dynamic offense, Baltimore, and in that game, their defense forced Baltimore out of its dynamic abilities.
Sure.
The Texans can be a dynamic offense, but they were playing their backups in Week 17. The Patriots' offense been bad all year long, and so they haven't faced a challenge like this since they've been this version of the Tennessee Titans.
No, they haven't faced a challenge like this. This is probably the single most explosive offense in the NFL. I liken them to the greatest show on turf if you go back to 2000-2001, and I really feel like this game is sort of that type of matchup, what we saw in that Super Bowl between the Rams and the Patriots. This game is almost going to be a referendum on the modern game of football, whether it's about the run game or being able to throw the football and air it out. So I look at the two contrasting styles of the teams offensively, and the one thing I will say, even though I feel like the Chiefs have a huge advantage in terms of personnel, the offensive line for the Titans is playing better than almost any other offensive line in the National Football League. I know that the 49ers rung up almost 200 yards against the Minnesota Vikings front seven, but this offensive line for the Titans and what they've been able to do, being able to reestablish the line of scrimmage, not allowing first contact on Derrick Henry until he's beyond the line of scrimmage, I think that's why their run game has been so effective. And if the Chiefs don't have an answer in terms of being able to slow him down, if they can't make Derrick Henry stop and start in the backfield, then you've got a 250-pound running back downhill on your second-level defenders, and that's not a recipe for success in terms of being able to stop this Titans offense. So this Chiefs defense, they better bring their hard hats because they're going to get tested, and Mike Vrabel is not going to go away from the strength of his team, which is the offensive line and the defensive line.
I waited my whole life to place my first bet in the NFL. Should this be the one?
Yes.
Guaranteed?
Chiefs minus seven.
Chiefs minus seven. Just
absolutely.
Go online and Google
Chiefs minus seven. What happened the last time the Titans went to Arrowhead?
It's a new year, the perfect opportunity to take your business to the next level by hiring the right people. But finding qualified candidates can be challenging. ZipRecruiter.com/FTF makes it easy. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/FTF. That's ZipRecruiter.com/FTF. ZipRecruiter.com/FTF. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All right, the Seahawks season came to an end Sunday night with a loss to the Green Bay Packers. Seattle hasn't advanced out of the divisional round since 2014. Russell Wilson, despite the early exit, had one of the best seasons of his career, but he knows there is more work to be done if he wants to cement his legacy.
I think about some of the best players in the world, just to be honest with you. I was thinking about it on the way home last night. I think about guys like Drew Brees. I think about guys like Tom Brady, Peyton Manning of the world. And, where I am in my career right now, I'm just finishing year 8. And, you know, where those guys were, you know, it's, you know, I want to be the best in the world. That's just the reality. And so I know this offseason, for me, it's what are the next 5 years going to look like? You know, what's it going to look like for this organization? What are we going to do to make sure that happens? Because those guys in the years 8 through 13 or so, that's where they really, really cemented themselves in their legacy. And I think that's what I think about, just to be honest with you. I think about that. I think about trying to be the best in the world.
Nick, you've been on this all this season, even most of last season as well, that this Seattle offense isn't really built around what Russell does best.
Yep.
So I ask, are the Seahawks wasting their window with Russell Wilson, if you will?
I can't say they're wasting their window with him because, first of all, I think they're only probably halfway through it. He's finished his 8th season. I bet he plays 15, 16 years at a high level in today's NFL, and the guy who's never been hurt, never missed a game. You have no reason to think he's not going to play a very long time. And, by the way, he just became the first quarterback ever to have a winning record each of his first 8 years. First guy to ever do that, and you've got to give him immense credit for that, and the organization immense credit for putting pieces around him, for never falling off, or even when they are rebuilding, staying competitive, winning at least 9 games. So I do want to give Seattle and Pete Carroll and John Schneider credit, and I think Schneider's one of the best GMs in football. My issue with Seattle, and what you're alluding to, is would they call their offensive game plan any different if Blake Bortles were their quarterback? And I can't see it. They call games like throwing the football is a last resort, like their quarterback is a liability. They call games, to use a more contemporary example than Blake because he's a backup now, the way you would expect the Titans to. We have a superstar running back and a quarterback, even if his numbers are good, we don't really trust in Ryan Tannehill. But that's the opposite of what they have. They have a superstar quarterback and Travis Homer and Marshawn Lynch is their running back as of late. And so last year, they lose a playoff game, in my opinion, because they did not trust Russell enough. Instead, they just kept running their head into a brick wall against the Cowboys' rush defense. In this postseason, they handed the ball off to Lynch and Homer 32 times for 58 yards. That's, what's less than, what, 1.8 yards per carry?
Not good.
It's horrible. Their best rusher was their best passer was Russell Wilson. And so I don't want to be too harsh because I think they have a great organization. I think Carroll holistically for everything he does is a really good coach. But they need to modernize their offense around the fact that they have one of the 3 best quarterbacks in the world for them. right now in the apex prime of his career. And to me, they didn't throughout the regular season. They got away with Russell Wilson pulling him out of the fire in close games. And they certainly didn't in that playoff loss to Green Bay, where once again, they were like, well, if it's close late, Russell will save us. But then the, forget the player's name, he dropped the pass on first and 10, and then Russell, their like third string wide receiver, dropped the pass on first and 10.
Yeah.
And then they end up having
Malik Turner.
Yeah. Thank you, Canty. He has that drop and Russell gets sacked. And all of a sudden, when you're trying to win by those margins, one drop pass, one bad sack, and you lose a football game that maybe you shouldn't have lost. So I do think they need to adjust that considerably, but rinse, repeat. We could be playing the same segment from a year ago after the Cowboys game when I was saying the exact same thing.
Well, here's the thing. I don't want to be overly critical of the Seattle Seahawks just because they've had a lot of success. I mean, almost unprecedented when you think about it. What, they've made the playoffs 7 out of Russell Wilson's first 8 seasons?
And the 1 year
you got 2 Super Bowl appearances. Yep. You got 1 championship. So it's hard for me to say that they're wasting him. I think Pete Carroll, in a roundabout way, is trying to protect his quarterback, because when you're paying your quarterback $35 million a year, you're going to have some deficiencies elsewhere in the roster. And one of the places that Seattle has historically struggled with in the Russell Wilson era is up front with the offensive line. So if you have a bad offensive line, do you really want to be a volume passing team? Do you want Russell Wilson to drop back and throw it 35, 40 times? Probably not. And that's why I think they lean toward this heavy run-oriented offense. And oh, by the way, they're also trying to retool the defensive side of the ball, because they don't have the Legion of Boom anymore. When you start paying your quarterback, guess what? You're going to lose on some other pieces. And I think a lot of that had to do with their secondary. If you look at what happened after Super Bowl 49, they started slowly but surely removing pieces off of that defense. And now I think the only remaining stalwarts are K.J. Wright and Bobby Wagner. So it's going to take some time. There is some ebb and flow in terms of roster construction and throughout the life of a quarterback in the National Football League. I just think that Russell Wilson is going through it what other quarterbacks go through. Aaron Rodgers has gone through it at times. Tom Brady has gone through it at times. So it's not like it's something that the other elite quarterbacks haven't faced. Heck, I think even Drew Brees had a 3-year stretch where they were on the outs and they were 7-9. So it happens with teams. But what separates Russell Wilson is he finds a way to keep his team consistently competitive and each and every year vying for a postseason berth.
And again, this is why I don't want to be too harsh on the Seahawks. I mean, they get DK Metcalf in the second round. They get first round pick for Frank Clark, but then acquire Clowney for a second or a third round pick. Mm-hmm. They make these moves where organizationally, they never bottom out. They don't have the years like you're talking about in New Orleans. I think it's a great organization. And I think Pete Carroll, throughout the 7-day work week, is a great coach. But on game day, you mentioned you don't want to risk your most expensive asset. And I always joke with you, give you a hard time, because I'm a little jealous that as a retirement gift to yourself, you bought yourself a Bentley. And I bet you were real cautious with it, but you still drove it. Yep. You weren't like, well, it's so expensive, I'm just going to leave it in the garage. You gave Russell Wilson $35 million a year.
Take it out
to use
for a spin.
Him. And if you're going to be cautious with him, take him out for a spin in the damn playoffs.
Right.
How about then? How about if you get to the playoffs doing it that way, in the playoffs, say, Russ, we're handing you the keys, figuratively, and go win us this game. They do that as a last resort far too often.
But like Canty, you said, it is impressive to see how much they have been able to accomplish using Russell Wilson the way they have and the people that they've
obviously. And they've never bottomed out. They deserve tremendous credit for that.
All right, let's move on to the NFC Championship game. The Packers, who just beat the Seattle Seahawks, will face the 49ers. They'll be playing each other for the second time this season. The first time didn't go so well for Green Bay. Back in Week 12, San Fran beat them by 29 points, dominated from start to finish. But Niners head coach Kyle Shanahan says beating Green Bay in the regular season has, quote, zero relevance to the NFC Championship game. Chris Canty, is he right? Can you not compare the two?
Well, I think he's right in terms of the game looking different than it did back in Week 12. But the one takeaway that you can get from their regular season matchup was how your guys look against their guys.
Yep.
And I think that's the part.
Most of their guys, because a lot of their guys were injured.
Well, Brian Bulaga didn't play the right tackle for the Green Bay Packers. In offensive line, that position group probably relies the most on continuity in terms of being able to collectively get their job done. And the strength of that 49ers team is their front seven. A lot of high draft picks, Nicky Bosa, Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, D. Ford, Solomon Thomas. They have a dominant defensive group. I think they were the only defensive line in football this year that had four rushers that had 6.5 sacks or more. So that is the strength of this 49ers team, and that's the part that Matt LaFleur has to be concerned with in looking at their first matchup. But the one thing that gave me a little bit of optimism for Green Bay going into this game is how they used Aaron Rodgers against the Seattle Seahawks. They got him out on the perimeter. They used a lot of swap boots to provide a target for him immediately in the flat off of the play fake. I think getting the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hand has to be a priority in this game just because you can't afford to give those 49ers pass rushers an opportunity to get to them. So I think if Matt LaFleur and that offensive staff put together a similar game plan in terms of getting the ball out of their quarterback's hands, they'll have a chance to be successful.
I understand what Kyle Shanahan's saying. I totally disagree with him because of exactly what Canty alluded to. There are certain games where you just throw out what happened in the past. You just throw it out and you say, that's not going to duplicate itself.
Well, we just saw Tennessee. We were talking about the Tennessee. And the
absolutely.
Chiefs.
And there's where it's like, okay, there's a defensive score. There's a blocked field goal. There's a muffed handling on a field goal. There's a lot of weird things that happened. There are certain games where, especially if it's about pass rush versus offensive line, you big people versus big people, and you say, well, what is going to change? And I've kind of backed myself into a corner a bit on this because you guys know very well my commitment to take integrity and pick integrity, yeah. Which is I picked the Packers to go to the Super Bowl before the year, and they're one of four teams remaining, so I'll be damned if I'm abandoning it. With that said, the day after that football game, 37-8 San Francisco, we sat right here, and I said, I think the Packers can still make the Super Bowl. But they're going to need someone to beat San Francisco for them because it seemed like the San Francisco front four, and that was a game without D. Ford. You mentioned Bulaga didn't play, yep. But neither did D. Ford for San Francisco. That front four seemed so overwhelming compared to the Packers' offensive line that Green Bay couldn't get into anything they wanted to do. They were 1 of 15 on. It was the worst game they played all year. Fewest yards, fewest points. Worst they were on third downs all year. 1 for 15 on third downs. It was a terrible game. So I don't think San Francisco is going to be that dominant as they were in the game 2 months ago because I don't think this game is going to be a blowout. But Green Bay better have been in the lab since then figuring out, are we going to have to do something to reference Seattle? That Seattle does a lot. Bring in a sixth offensive lineman. Are we going to have to do a lot of misdirection, screens, something to get that pass rush off balance, off schedule? Because if that pass rush and front four has anything close to the effectiveness we saw in the regular season, Green Bay's drawing dead. I don't care how many times Jimmy Garoppolo throws it to the other team, he's going to throw it to Green Bay, and Green Bay's then going to go 3 and out. Because if you can't block these guys, and you mention how dominant the D-line's been statistically, and they're supposed to be.
Yep.
Nobody's put more resources into a defensive front than John Lynch in San Francisco since they've been there. This is how they built that team. That will determine whether or not Green Bay can stay in this game. Can you give Aaron Rodgers more than 2 seconds to scan the field and figure out who the ball is going to?
And can you provide some easy completions for Aaron Rodgers as well? That was one of the things that I thought Matt LaFleur did well in that game against the Seahawks. I mean, in that gotta-have-it situation right before the two-minute warning, that throw to Jimmy Graham, if you look at the formation that they built, it was 3-by-1, and they had the number 3 receiver clear out because they had press man coverage, and then they brought Jimmy Graham on a crosser, and it created a natural pick with the safety who was in coverage on him, and that's an easy pitch and catch. It was actually the play that they used on the first down in the game, third down of the game on their first possession. So you look at those types of things, if Matt LaFleur can throw in enough of that, some high percentage throws for Aaron Rodgers, get the ball out of his hands, move the pocket, move the launch point a little bit, I think they'll have a chance because, let's face it, the quarterback on the other side of this matchup hasn't been a world beater this year in Jimmy Garoppolo. And if the Minnesota Vikings could do anything with the interception that Aaron Kendricks got right before halftime, you're probably talking about a different game in the second half, a game that's a little more competitive out there in the Bay Area this past weekend. So I think it's all about Green Bay being able to try to do enough in terms of making some easy throws for Aaron Rodgers, but then also when you get in those situations, relying on Aaron Rodgers' greatness to take you over the top, because clearly they have an advantage with the quarterback matchup.
But can he quickly also maybe a little psychological coaching by Kyle Shanahan to make sure his guys forget what happened? This is not going to be
an easy game. That's 100% what he's doing.
Right?
He wants to make sure that the guys have the requisite urgency and intensity that they have to have going into an NFC championship game.
Exactly. Despite being one of the hottest head coaching candidates out there, Josh McDaniels did not land one of those jobs and is returning to New England as offensive coordinator. So what does that mean for Tom Brady? Well, a column in the Boston Globe suggests it could give hope that Brady will also return to New England. Brady knows and seems comfortable in McDaniels' system. But Nick, should the Patriots even want Tom Brady back?
So it's a very interesting question. And first, I agree with the column in the Globe that Josh McDaniels coming back does change the incentives a bit for Brady. I actually was talking to Joe Theismann about this exact thing, and he made a point that I had not considered, which was if he leaves, his whole offseason, where is the one downtime he gets, the time with his family, the time where he and Giselle very often go to Brazil, and that's all gone. Because it's new system, new players, new playbook, it's now learning. And it's almost back to school as a 42-year-old, sure, soon-to-be 43-year-old man. And by the way, that might have also been the case if Josh McDaniels leaves. You bring a new offensive coordinator if he changes the system. So McDaniels' stability in New England, which might, for Brady, further incentivize him to stay. But the question is, should the Patriots want him to stay? And this sounds disrespectful, but it's not. The answer is no. And the answer is no, not because of anything bad against Brady in the past, but because Brady is no longer a championship-level player. And the earlier you can get on to the next phase, the when you know, man, I have hit my ceiling at this job, I'm not going to get the promotion, I'm not going to get this, the quicker you make the move, the better off you are. When you know you're in a relationship that isn't going to where you want it to go, the quicker you rip the Band-Aid off, the better off you are. And the Patriots and Tom Brady have had a beautiful, unprecedented, amazing 20-year run. But the run of championship contention is over. Belichick's run of being a championship coach is not. So, do you want to, for the sake of nostalgia, hold on to what was once great? Or do you want to do what Belichick has done his entire career, which is make the hard decision and say, I appreciate what you've done for me in the past, but it is about what you can do for me tomorrow, not what you did for me yesterday, and we are ready to turn the page. To me, Belichick already made it very clear he was ready for that when he didn't give Brady the contract extension, and I think those are the exact discussions they're having in Foxborough right now.
Yeah, you giving up on Tom Brady, it seems to be pretty consistent. I feel like you've done that quite a bit, like a million other people who said it's over. I mean, it was over 5 years ago. It was over when he turned 30. It was over. I mean, it's always over. So at some point, everybody's going to be right, and it's going to be over.
But what if that point's now?
What if it is now? But let's talk about a couple things. Josh McDaniels coming back is A, great for the Patriots and increases the chances of Tom being there, to me, significantly. Because if you're Tom, you do want to go back to a program where you know everybody who's involved, there's continuity, there's not going to be that type of learning, although they wouldn't change the system dramatically, but you're comfortable with the person who's calling the plays. So to me, that's great. Hopefully Dante Scarnecchia comes back for the Patriots and for Tom as well. So I think the chances of him returning increases substantially. In terms of wanting him back, look, he's had seasons like this in the past. 2013 wasn't a great season for him. I think 2006 was similar, wasn't a great season for him. And we could say it's just a function of him not being good enough anymore. Or we could say that, you know, we add a few components. Some of these young players get a little bit better. They went 12-4?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, well, maybe they'll go 14-2 next year. Maybe they'll win the division for the, 14th, 13th? Well,
they've won it every year since.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track. But anyways, maybe he'll do that, or maybe they will move on. And look, Bill, one of the things that does make Bill great is his ruthless ability to move on from player favorites. And Just look at Bernie Kosar. I mean, he cut Bernie Kosar in Cleveland with diminishing skills. And
that was when he had 1% of the power and prestige he has now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was a controversial. You've talked to me about it off the air. Bernie was a legend there.
Legend.
Belichick was, at the time, nobody. He was just the guy who happened to be the current coach of the Browns, and he still did it then.
And Vinny Testaverde came in, and the first play Vinny Testaverde ever took was a fumble that was returned for a touchdown. But in retrospect, he made the right decision. Vinny had some very successful years after that, and Bernie kind of moved into a backup role. So he does have that ability to do that, but I don't necessarily believe that the performance this year means that Tom can't come back and do it once again. I'm not ready, like you are, to give up on him. I do think if there's a little bit of progress offensively from some of those young guys, we may be looking at a really different offense next year.
No, Coach, I'm right there with you. I'm not ready to give up on Tom Brady either. I think that if the Patriots are looking at their quarterback options, they'd have to probably come to the conclusion that Tom Brady would be the most viable of the guys on the free agent market this offseason. Now, obviously, you have to throw in the caveat of what the number is going to be like, what the contract is going to look like. But, I mean, they really don't have an alternative in terms of who's going to play quarterback in 2020 for him, not with an organization that expects to compete at a certain level. And when you consider how talented their defense is, this is a team that should be in the postseason in 2020. When you look at the landscape of the division that they're in, and you look at how well that defense played throughout the course of the year, not so much at the end of the year, but throughout the course of the year, you have to feel good about Bill Belichick and the program that he has and their opportunity to compete. And if you're talking about being able to compete at a championship level, you do have to have somebody under center that has some experience and that can make plays and be timely in terms of being able to use your offense to complement what your defense and your special teams brings to the table. I think that's what Tom Brady represents for the Pats, much in the same way that Peyton Manning represented for the Denver Broncos that year they won Super Bowl 50. So I still think Tom Brady is able to play at a level that will allow this organization to compete for a championship, but they have to drastically improve the talent level around him on the offensive side of the
ball.
But
I get what you're saying. So play general manager for a second. You're figuring out what you're going to do next year for the Patriots.
He plays all the time.
I know he does. I sit across from him. He just got really excited. So what do you do? So I get that you're ready to move on from Tom Brady. With the defense that have coming in next year, what do you do?
I ask myself, what's the best use of, let's call it $28 million.
Okay.
And the question is, if I am going to get, I don't think Brady is going to have a miraculous bounce back year at age 43. Coach is correct that, A, I said at age 40, we've never seen a guy do it. I don't think he's going to be able to do it. All history says he can't do it. And he won the league MVP that year. Okay? Coach is absolutely correct that I said this 2 years ago, and he won the league MVP. And that was based nothing about, by the way, how he had played the previous year. He had a 112 rating at age 39. I just said age 40 is when guys hit the cliff and fall off it. I thought it was going to happen. The difference is we've now seen it happen. What I was saying 2 years ago was a prediction. This is no longer a prediction. It is no longer predicting the demise of Tom Brady. It is acknowledging the demise of Tom Brady. But to directly answer your question, I think you can better use $28 million. I think you can get a replacement level quarterback, be it Teddy Bridgewater, there are some Marcus Mariota traits because he never turns the ball over. It's the one thing he does really well. And he has some mobility for an offensive line that is not what it once was. I think that with the right coordinating, with the right coaching, you could get the best out of him like they did in year two. That if you can get that guy for $8 million and then spend $20 million, because all I've heard all year is the Patriots don't have enough weapons. It's not Tom's fault. And this is where I'm very interested even what the possible counter could be. In column A,
I don't think that's a totally fair assessment. It's not like what we typically do here where we say, you know, this guy needs more weapons, this guy needs more weapons, this guy needs more weapons. It was a function of them losing their starting center. They're losing their starting left tackle. If any other team had gone through that, we would have given him some sort of medal
coach,
to be 12-4.
Coach, I totally disagree with you. Teams go through that every year. And by the way, their left tackle, they let leave in free agency, and then Isaiah Wynn was there for the second half of the year. The Chiefs were without their starting left tackle for 8 weeks, their starting left guard for 4 of those weeks. Nobody talked about it. And they lost their fullback. And that's a very important piece of your team if you don't have a good passing offense. You better have a good fullback because you're going to have to run the football. And if you can, and it's the NFL, there's going to be injuries. But just to get back to the point quickly, column A, you have what I believe, that while the skill positions weren't great, the quarterback play really, really was poor this year. Column B is he was done dirty by the lack of talent around him. Needed tight ends, needed better offensive line, needed better receivers. If you believe column B, if you bring him back, you don't have the money to fix it. So, why would it be better next year when you don't have the money? You traded a pick for Mohamed Sanu. I'm told he stinks. I'm told that it's not Brady's fault that Mohamed Sanu just all of a sudden got to New England and started stinking. He was fine in Atlanta, but now he stinks. So is that going to change? I'm told N'Keal Harry must just be the wrong pick. It's not that he was. There's a reason he was drafted for DK Metcalf and Terry McLaurin and A.J. Brown, all these guys that succeeded. No, they just had the wrong pick there. Well, is that going to change? He become the right pick? Or it's A or B. Either way, the right move for the Patriots is to move on from Tom.
So you'd rather take what's behind door number two than the known commodity that you have in Tom Brady right now?
If the known commodity is not good enough and the unknown saves me money and might be better, then yes.
Marcus Mariota might be better?
That's good.
Oh, okay, I was just curious.
I'm just saying, if we're just going to sit back and say that nobody can get better, those young players can't get better, and Bill Belichick can't find a way to either pick up some free agents or pick up some guys in the draft to help that group get better, and because we're signing him to a $28 million contract, which is still probably below what he's worth, that now they can't improve the team, I think that's defeatist.
Marcus Mariota plus $20 million of other players, I think, would be better.
Marcus Mariota can't beat out Tannehill.
That's
general manager Nick Reiter. Coach, is there a chance the Chiefs can actually pull off this upset? Titans can pull off the upset? Is there any way the Chiefs lose this game?
Yeah, there's absolutely a chance that they could lose this game. The Giant Killers are coming to town. They've been able to slay the dragon everywhere that they've gone. And it's the last time they played, they won. And they've won, what is it, 4 straight against Andy Reid? So there's a history here of them being able to beat the Chiefs. But more importantly, when you go and you look at the last game that they played, they did some creative things. They did some different things defensively. I thought that Dean Pease did a really nice job of mixing up the coverages. There was some five-man zone pressures, mixture of cover two. There was man-to-man. There were a lot of things that Mahomes had to think about, and they're going to have to do that again because, to Nick's point, this is a really hard offense to stop, not just because of the talent level, but because of the creativity, because of the way that they attack, the adjustments that they force you to make. So you are going to have to spin the Rolodex a little bit defensively. And the real question is, can they stop Derrick Henry? And last time, they couldn't. It was 188 yards, a big run for a touchdown. I think it was like 60-plus. Mm-hmm. You remember, right?
Yeah.
And then it's the mistakes. That last game, they got away with those mistakes. And I don't know if they're going to get away with the same mistakes against this team, which is really well coached and poised for the big upset.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know how much they got away with the mistakes because they were down 24-0 by the end of the first quarter, but they were just able to make enough plays from the second quarter and beyond to be able to come back in that game and actually take control of it. But, I mean, when you look at this Tennessee Titans team, I don't know that the pace of the game is going to allow the Kansas City Chiefs to overcome those types of mistakes that they had last week in the divisional round against the Texans. Just because Tennessee wants to grind this game to a halt, to me, that's their only real path to victory. Being able able to limit the number of possessions that the Kansas City Chiefs have. If you're talking about single-digit possessions, then I think that's advantage Titans, and they're going to have to rely on Derrick Henry and that offensive line, that running game, in order to be able to control the clock. Derrick Henry, what he's done the last three games, no player, no running back in NFL history has done. Over 180 yards in each of them, and that's really the big reason why this Tennessee Titans team is here. You're showing it, that third and one that he takes 66 yards and into the red zone, that was pretty much the death knell for the Baltimore Ravens. And of course, that Tennessee Titans offense, they took advantage of all the miscues that the Ravens presented. All of their points came off of turnovers from the Baltimore Ravens, whether they were true takeaways or turnovers on down. So the Kansas City Chiefs are going to have to play a much cleaner game if they are going to beat the Tennessee Titans. I think the Titans are the more physical team. I think the Chiefs have to make sure that they avoid all of those mistakes that they had in their first playoff game this year if they want to advance to the Super Bowl.
Can the Titans play better than they did against Baltimore? I don't think they can, and that wouldn't be good enough to beat the Chiefs. Scored 28 points. They played as well offensively as they can play. 28 points will not be enough to beat Kansas City. Not with the way the offense is clicking, not with the offensive line finally healthy, not with Patrick Mahomes finally healthy and the receiving core finally healthy. It simply won't be enough. And while the Titans, after, by the way, in week 15, losing a game to Houston with the division on the line, then going up 14-0 on New Orleans, only to have New Orleans come all the way back and beat them by double digits, they are on a really nice three-game stretch. And where Derrick Henry has been sensational. First player league history, three straight games, 180 yards rushing. No one's ever done it. And only as far as total yards rushing, Walter Payton in 77 and O.J. Simpson in 76 have had more total rushing yards over three games. With that said, in this three-game stretch, they have played the Texans backups, who had no downfield passing game, the New England Patriots, who have no downfield passing game, and the Baltimore Ravens, for as great as they were against quality competition all year, struggled with downfield passing game. Well, now you are playing the league's best downfield passing attack by a mile. The margin of difficulty for them defensively, everyone's talking about what Derrick Henry can do to the Chiefs' defense. I'm happy for him and I'm excited for him. Can he get six touchdowns? Because the Titans are going to need six touchdowns to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. They needed four touchdowns plus a defensive score plus two botched field goals at the end to escape against Kansas City the first time in Patrick Mahomes' first game back off a dislocated kneecap, and Patty still went for 450 and a 120 passer rating. This is, the Titans have had a...
But why do you think Kansas City is going to be suddenly mistake-free? They made a mistake against the Titans last time, which resulted the fumble, which resulted in a touchdown. They had the two field goals blocked. They showed a history of mistakes last game. Yep. Why suddenly is this going to be the clean game?
Oh.
And do they have a downfield passing game? Yeah, they do have a downfield passing game. But there were drop passes last game that ideally would be caught this next game. I'm saying last game against the Titans that could have been huge plays. But there's nothing that says they won't do that again. What we've seen from Kansas City is them shoot themselves in the foot quite a bit. And you say that the downfield passing game in terms of Derrick Henry against the 26th best run defense could totally control this game and limit the opportunity.
Well, it's a couple things. One is, I'm not saying the Chiefs will play mistake-free. I mean, God, they could have a punt block for a touchdown. They could muffle punt themselves. They could have all those drops and then storm all the way back as they did against a team that was better than the Titans this year. In Houston, we saw it happen 2 days ago. But the Chiefs are not a turnover-prone team. Patrick Mahomes had five picks and two lost fumbles on the season. The Chiefs are not a team that what they did in the beginning of the game against Houston is par for the course for them. And one thing I think the Texans game showed Kansas City, which I am glad, if there were any remaining doubts, quit messing around trying to establish the run. It is not 1985, and you are not the team for it. There are certain teams, there are a few teams, San Francisco, Baltimore, Tennessee, that are built to do that. The Chiefs are built for the opposite. At this point for the Chiefs, except for in certain situations, a run play is a wasted play because you cannot match up with their speed. They have been built to beat teams like this. The one good thing that happened in the Texans game, Coach, was because they were down 24-0, they had to abandon in the run, and that's what led to the 51-7 onslaught. You just had a team do something that's never been done in the history of football. They are not then going to lose to a 9-win team at home for a chance to go to the Super Bowl. It's not going to happen, Canty.
Well, you say that. The one thing I would be concerned with that Chiefs offense is being able to block the interior of that Titans defensive front, because Daquan Jones, Jarrell Quasey, and Jeffrey Simmons played really, really well last week, collapsed the pocket, created quick pressure up the middle on Lamar Jackson. That's not something that Pat Mahomes wants to face all day, every day. And if you're talking about them not messing around with the run game and being one-dimensional, that's the risk you run, because your quarterback, for all the great things that Pat Mahomes is, when he gets knocked out, if he keeps getting hit, then that can present a problem in terms of your team being able to be explosive.
And aren't they 0-3 at home against Kansas City?
Against Tennessee.
Again. Here's the thing. I'll just say the league is littered with can't miss, can't lose teams.
Yep.
And
you've beaten a few of those can't miss, can't lose teams.
And I hope it works out for you.
And we remember all those because they're rare. You know who usually wins conference championship games at home as big favorites? The favorite. We remember the times that the 9-7 team went on the run because it almost never happens. The Titans aren't, just close your eyes and imagine.
When's the last time it happened?
Can you imagine
Super Bowl
54 involving the Tennessee Titans? You can't, because it won't.
Last night, Joe Burrow put on a show to lead LSU to the national championship. However, some still believe that the other quarterback last night, Trevor Lawrence, will be better in the NFL. Canty, you in or out on Burrow being a better pro quarterback than Lawrence?
Jenna, I am out. I think Trevor Lawrence is the more talented quarterback, and I think he'll end up in a better situation. Joe Burrow's probably going to get drafted number one overall to the Cincinnati Bengals, and they're a historically bad organization. Good organizations develop their people. Bad organizations don't. The Bengals are bad. I don't think that Joe Burrow will have the best chance to realize his full potential there.
Yeah, good, bad organizations can become good organizations if you get a really good quarterback. I'm not sure how this is going to play out, but I do love the fact that this kid was able to throw 12 touchdowns in the playoffs, and I think that gives him a chance. You'd like to think that performance under pressure gives him a chance to be really good at the next level.
I think Joe Burrow's a fine prospect. If I had the number one pick of the draft the year Joe Burrow was the top quarterback, I'd be a little bummed. I'd be like, I'd want a guy like Trevor Lawrence. I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be a super duper star in this league. If next year, when he comes out, if I'm a team that needs a quarterback and I have the number two pick, I will offer you the old Ricky Williams deal. The number two pick and all the picks thereafter to move up one spot to get sunshine. I think he is a franchise changer. I don't think Joe Burrow is that, even though Joe Burrow outdueled him last night. So I'm out.
Wow. All right.
On touchdowns isn't good enough for Nick. He got 15.
On to Drew Brees now. Right now, it's unclear if he'll return next season. The Saints also have decisions to make on their other quarterbacks, Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill. Can he win or out on Brees returning next season?
I'm out on it, Jenna. And Nick is talking about Tom Brady being done. I hope he keeps that same energy for Drew Brees, because if folks ain't paying attention, Drew Brees cost him an opportunity to advance, had the two turnovers in the divisional round or in the wild card round against the Minnesota Vikings. That is unacceptable. It's a couple of years in a row where turnovers by Drew Brees cost his team a chance to advance. I am out on Drew Brees being the Saints quarterback in 2020.
I am in on Drew Brees being the quarterback. I think that the experience that he has, the ability that he still has to put them in a position to compete for a championship every year. And I think there's a lot of things in New Orleans that could be a little bit better for them to get over that hump.
I'm in on Brees being back next year. The turnovers in the playoff game is a fair point, but over the totality of the season, you said he'd keep the same energy for Tom Brady. Over the totality of the season, Drew Brees was really, really good, while Tom Brady was not.
Drew Brees' backup was also really, really good,
too. That's fair enough. And they do have an obviously better succession plan to Bridgewater as opposed to Jared Stidham. I understand that. But Brees is younger, and Brees is still playing at a higher level than Tom, even if in back-to-back years in the playoff game, he hasn't been at his best. And by the way, Drew Brees ain't turning down them checks, man. He got those diamonds that aren't worth what he thought they were worth. They're going to offer offer him $30 million. You got to take that $30 million, man. Come on, Drew.
Maybe Stidham is a diamond in the rough, and we all don't know it yet.
Huh? Maybe.
The Chiefs. Maybe. Okay, I got it.
Maybe.
I understand when you say maybe like that. The Chiefs will face a tough test Sunday when going up against Derrick Henry. In his last three games, Henry has nearly 600 rushing yards, 4 touchdowns. Kenny, you win or out on the Chiefs being able to slow down Derrick Henry?
Jenna, I'm out on the Chiefs defense being able to slow down Derrick Henry. Now, maybe the Chiefs offense can, because if they put a lot of points on the scoreboard, then the Titans got to get away from the run game. But overall, the Titans are the more physical group up front, and Derrick Henry going downhill against your linebackers and defensive backs, that ain't a good recipe for success. So I am out on the Chiefs being able to slow him down.
Just let me check real quick.
Yeah, I'm out as well. I don't know what Nick is going to classify slowing down Derrick Henry. He put up 188 last game, so I guess they hold him, what, 186? That'll be a better performance. I think he's gonna run all over him.
I'm in on the Chiefs being able to slow down Derrick Henry for two reasons. One is, the best way to slow him down is to jump out on him 17-0 and force them into a passing game, which I anticipate Kansas City will. Secondarily, Derrick Henry is sensational. Is he the greatest running back in the history of football? Because that is what he would need to be to have a fourth game like this. Only Walter Payton and O.J. Simpson have done what he's done over three games. Only those two guys have done what he would be doing if he goes for 150-plus over four games. At some point, especially because no time off, 32 carries, 34 carries, 30 carries over his last three games, he's going to slow himself down because of the natural wear and tear for all those reasons, and because the Titans are going to be playing catch-up. I'm in on this.
And Nick said he'd get a Derrick Henry tattoo if the Titans won the game.
Sure.
Will you?
Add it.
A
sure.
Giant one on
no
your
problem.
Arm?
Where? No problem.
On his arm.
Okay.
Coach,
I got to be
there for that.
On your shoulder.
Sure.
Okay.
Good.
You
can get it done at South Beach. You can get it done
no
down
problem.
There.
No problem.
Coach, thanks so much for hanging out today. Time to play Drawing a Blank. So last night, Joe Burrow balled out to win the national championship for LSU. 6 touchdowns, pretty much universally considered to be going number one to the Bengals. So, Kenny, the number one pick in the 2020 draft should be blank.
It should be Joe Burrow. Now, I don't think he's the best player in the draft, but the team that's picking number one, the Bengals, they need quarterback help because they're probably going to move on from Andy Dalton. So, yeah, they absolutely should take Joe Burrow. Quarterback is the most important position, and he's had the best season of any quarterback in college football.
I agree. I'm going Joe Burrow also. He has leadership. I even like the story where he picked a fight with the defense when he first got there. That shows his integrity, just how he have a chip on his shoulder. Cincinnati needs this in their franchise right now. I'm going Joe Burrow.
I agree with you that they got to take a quarterback. I think Tua's the best. I take Tua Tagovailoa. I understand there are legitimate major injury concerns, but to me, Tua's upside is substantially higher than Joe Burrow's. Now, his downside is way lower. I get that. His downside is injury-riddled career never gets off the ground. And Burrow at the very least, is going to be a long-term serviceable starter. Everyone disagrees with me on this. I don't see superstar from Joe Burrow. I see good NFL quarterback. I see superstar from Tua and the kid Trevor Lawrence. I see franchise-changing super-duper star. I just don't see that from Joe Burrow, despite his record-breaking season this year.
And the way they're protecting quarterbacks, Tua's got a shot even with
absolutely
those injuries. All right, yesterday the Browns officially announced they hired Kevin Stefanski as their head coach. Now all 5 of the coaching vacancies across the league are filled. Kenny, the best NFL head coaching hire this offseason is blank.
I'm going with Mike McCarthy. The Dallas Cowboys moved away from Jason Garrett because they have championship aspirations. This will be the first head coach that they've had in the last decade and a half that's actually won a championship. I mean, so the last decade has been Jason Garrett, hasn't worked out. Mike McCarthy is a good coach. I mean, if you look at his record and Sean Payton's record, they got the same amount of losses, the same amount of Super Bowl wins, and Sean Payton only has 6 more wins in his career. So Mike McCarthy's still a good coach. I know the perception of who he is a little bit off because of how things ended in Green Bay, but I love this hire for the Dallas Cowboys.
I'm going Mike McCarthy for the same reasons. You know, he has Super Bowls, he has postseason experience, and the only knock that he had was he didn't give the ball to Rodgers when Rodgers wanted the ball. In Dallas, You want to feed Zeke in them 2 minute, well, 4 minute drills, 2 minute drills. You want to feed Zeke and not gamble too much on the offensive side of the ball. So I think he fits Dallas or what he likes to do as an offensive mind. And I just think that's the best coach for the job.
Eric Bieniemy. Oh, wait, he didn't get a job. Ron Rivera is my answer. Ron Rivera is going to bring stability and toughness to an organization that desperately needs it. I think Ron Rivera did an excellent job in Carolina until Cam got hurt and the last season and a half went awry. Ron Rivera, to me, is the best of the people that did get hired. Eric Bieniemy would have been, but for the second straight year, he doesn't get hired. So he'll be the answer next year when he finally does get hired, hopefully.
The other guy that didn't get hired was Josh McDaniels.
Yep.
He was not hired as a head coach. He'll remain the Patriots' offensive coordinator. And, of course, he's close to Tom Brady, so the foundation for Brady to return is still intact. Kenny, Brady's team next season will be blank.
Jenna, I think it's going to be the New England Patriots. He's not going anywhere. He'll probably survey his options and then look at what teams are willing to pay him and realize that the best situation for him, if he wants to continue his career, is to play in New England. This is somebody that's competed at a high level for a really long time. And the one thing that all of those people that do that, that have the opportunity to compete for championships, realize is that you need good people around you in order to accomplish that. I think Tom Brady will realize that once he looks at his options.
I'm going with the Patriots also, just because Josh McDaniels stayed, but only if they can find a weapon and that they can trade for, like an OBJ. I don't think they bring Tom Brady back and keep this same receiver core and tight end core from last year. I think they'll bring in a Teddy Bridgewater, somebody that's mobile and can make things happen and try to build from there. But I'd say the Patriots for right now.
The Chargers have been my pick on this for 3 months. There seems to be some momentum, a swell behind that. It makes too much sense. They need to sell tickets. They have great weapons. Phillip Rivers' time is over. I understand you're like, well, Phillip Rivers too old. Isn't Tom Brady too old? Nobody in Los Angeles right now cares about the Chargers. They're like seventh tier behind Lakers, Dodgers, USC football. You got to keep going down the
list. Probably the signs behind the Cowboys, the Giants, in LA.
The Rams for sure. Right. And so the Chargers make too much sense. He owns a home out there. I think he could sell his family on it. For all those reasons, the Chargers have been my pick since November. I'm going to stick with it.
I thought you were going to say he can sell his family. I'm like, he's probably not going to do that. Didn't you think he was going to say that?
It sounded like he was going there.
Brandon, thanks so much for hanging out today. It's always fun. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.